I had sense enough to look quizzical and indulgent at this, for I knew that the most popular heroes are those who take themselves lightly. I had heard this kind of rot, time without count, in the past few years, and knew how to receive it, but it amused me to see that the audience, as usual, took it perfectly seriously, the men looking noble, and the women frankly admiring. Having delivered her little lecture, Lola took me on a tour of introduction, presenting Baron this and Countess that, and everyone was all smirks and bows and polite as pie. I could sense that they were all scared stiff of her, for although she was her old gay self, laughing and chattering as she took me from group to group, she was still a grande dame under the happy surface, with a damned imperious eye. Oh, she had them disciplined, all right. Only when she'd taken me apart to a couch where a flunky served as tokay, while the others stood at a respectful distance, did she let the mask drop a little, and the Irish began to creep back into her voice.
"Let me look at you comfortably now,"
says she, leaning back and surveying me over a glass.
"I like the moustaches, Harry. They become you splendidly. And the careless curl. Oh, it's a bonny boy still."
"And you are still the most beautiful girl in the world,"
says I, not to be outdone.
"So they say," says she, "but I like to hear it from you. After all, when you hear it from Germans, it's no compliment, not when you consider the dumpy cows they're comparing you with."
"Some of 'em ain't too bad," says I carelessly.
"Ain't they, though? I can see I shall have to keep an eye on you, me lad. I saw Baroness Pechmann wolfing you up a moment ago when she was presented."
"Which one was she?"
"Come, that's better. The last one you met over there with the yellow hair."
"She's fat. Overblown."
"Yes, poor soul, but some men like it, I'm told."
"Not I, Rosanna."
"Rosanna," she repeated, smiling. "I like that. You know that no one ever calls me by that name now. It reminds me of England. You've no notion how famous it is to hear English again. In conversation, I mean, like this."
"Was that why you sent for me, for my conversation?"
"That, and other things."
"What other things?" says I, seeing a chance to get down to business. "What's this very delicate matter that your Chamberlain talked about?"
"Oh, that."
She put on a coy look.
"That can wait a little. You must know I have a new motto since I came to Bavaria. Pleasure before business."
She gave me a sleepy look from beneath those glorious black lashes that made my heart skip a little.
"You wouldn't be so ungallant as to hurry me, would you, Harry?"
"Not where business is concerned," says I, leering again. "Pleasure's another matter."
"Wicked,"
she says, smiling lazily like a sleek black cat.
"Wicked, wicked, wicked."
'Tis remarkable what fatuities you can exchange with a beautiful woman. I can think shame when I consider the way I sat babbling with Lola on that couch. I would ask you only to remember that she was as practised a seductress as ever wore out a bed linen, and just to be beside her, even in a room full of people, was in itself intoxicating. She was overpowering, like some rich tropical flower, and she could draw a man like a magnet. The same Dr. Windischmann, Vicar General, whose name she'd been taking in vain so recently, once said that there was not even a priest in his charge who could have been trusted with her. Liszt put it more bluntly and accurately when he observed to me,
"As soon as you meet Lola, your mind leaps into bed."